Why did you decide to make Rotello and Homer again? Were you, like, moving and you found it and picked it up and was like, I want this? Were you thinking about it and being like, I think I'll make this or something else?
I really hadn't given Rotello and Homer much thought for decades, honestly. Certainly, I remembered having that experience as a kid of submitting it and getting the rejection letter. But I just put it away with the rest of my illustration work. So when I was a kid, I used to draw comic books. And from sixth grade until about 12th grade, all I did was draw comics. So I have this giant tub of comic book art that I created as a kid. And I had put my Rotello and Homer submission in there because it was very much similar to the characters I was creating for comic books later on. So I was just digging through my old art bin for no particular reason. I had just moved and I just found that paperwork and was like, oh man, that was fun. And then I didn't think about it again until I started working on the hardcover book for Collecting the Art of G.I. Joe. And I knew I wanted to go around and gather a lot more interviews for that to really beef it up over what we did with the six soft covers. And I just decided instead of sitting down and doing talking head interviews and only doing talking head interviews, I really wanted to get them up and active and in their element and doing what they do and feeling good, you know? And so I thought, what if I got them to design a figure and, oh my God, I've got this figure that I submitted when I was a 10-year-old kid. What if they did that one? And so I totally gave them an out, though. Like I told Ron Rudak, Kirk Bazigian, if you guys don't love this radio teletype operator concept, you can totally throw it out. You can do anything you want to do. You can do a totally different character. And Ron enjoyed the concept enough that he was like, no, yeah, let's do this one. So he ended up doing some amazing concepts for it. And that's how Rotello and Homer emerged from the darkness after 3 decades.
Dun da da!
Yep, triumphant return.
This is the Order of Battle.
Came back from Joe Fest really energized about the 3D Joe's Operation Recall panel. And by the time everybody listens to this, the project is live and we are working toward unlocking Alexander's character. Shh. That's S with four H's. The day it went live, Carson and I were able to jump on an interview, but also, A, you interviewed Carson. How did you like that experience?
It was fun. I had a lot of great questions. We chatted.
You did have a lot of great questions, and I hope people really enjoy that portion of the interview. A, we were in the room. You were texting me to hurry up and get there. Came in late, and I didn't have a place to sit beside you. When he flashed the card back up on the screen, I recognized the silhouette of Shh immediately. Did you?
Yes, but I was wondering. Hang on. This is probably Shh, but I'm not 100% sure. I'm 99% sure that Shh.
But you were 100% sure that it was one of your three characters.
No, I'm pretty sure it was Shh, but I wasn't fully sure.
Okay. Now, you were sitting beside John and Bobby.
Yeah.
Bobby is the other young man who is one of the 16 creative designers. He had
Clanker and Tank.
Clanker and Tank. You are 10, just about to be 11. Bobby is 12, just about to be 13. Your birthdays are very close. And I think you guys are the youngest of the Vanguard here.
Yeah. We're the only two kids, as far as I know.
How did you feel in the room?
Nervous.
And when he asked you to walk up and talk, how did you feel?
Nervous.
Nervous. Well, you did a pretty good job.
Yeah.
You talked about your character. You mentioned Ron Rudat. You talked about how the robotic prosthetic leg is not noisy because he's a ninja and it needs to be silent.
Yeah.
Let's jump into the interview, and hopefully everybody enjoys it and backs it. The Kickstarter is going on now through 7 August. Your card is charged about an hour or so after the Kickstarter ends on 7 August, and then within a few weeks or a few months, depending on how long it takes to put everything together, we'll all get a backer kit. So if you back for one figure in the backer kit, you choose the figure. If you back for all in or all in times 2 or times 10 builder or times 20 builder, whatever the case is, you get to choose all of that in the backer kit. And you can even add more then if you're broke today and you want to just add a little bit now and a lot later. Thank you, Carson, for coming on and talking to us. And thank you to the legendary retired Hasbro G.I. Joe design team for choosing 16 community people and their designs and running with this amazing concept.
Thank you.
Why couldn't you just, like, go out and find the parts? I think at Joe Fest, I remember seeing that original design, the original paper that got sent back to you from Hasbro.
Yep.
Actually read the rejection letter.
Yep.
If I'm correct, it had hawk legs or something. Why couldn't you just find those parts and basically kitbash it?
You could have a decent start by reusing the parts that were part of the formula that I came up with, which is kind of crazy as a 10-year-old that I was thinking, how can I sell this through to Hasbro? Maybe if I only ask them to make a few new parts, they'll be more prone to make the figure. But I'm not really a customizer. And it went so far beyond what I would have been able to do as a customizer if I did just go ahead and kitbash it and paint up my own figure. They took the concept and made it so much better than it was in terms of, you know, adding different decorative elements to it, beefing up the accessories that came with them. Definitely going out and kitbashing it would have gotten me something. I would have had something in hand, but it wouldn't have gotten me the level of professional quality that we're going to be getting. Don't get me wrong, it was fun to see my figure that I wanted since I was 10 come to life through these guys, but it was more fun to be engaging with them and filming with them and going through the process.
When will we be able to, like, fully speak about the figures that got chosen?
Yeah, so we're going to be unveiling those as the waves get unlocked. Let me pull up Operation Recall and submissions. All right, so your character is Wave 2, Figure 2. So as soon as we hit 120,000, I'm going to be unveiling Wave 2. So we just hit $100,000. We are 5/6 of the way there, right? So get ready is what I'm saying.
Sweet.
You're going to be able to talk about being selected pretty quickly here. We're at 100. We need to get to 120.
Will there be, like, multiple color studies for our figures?
Yes. Rotello had 6 color studies. Kirk Bazigian reviewed that, marked it up, and we came back and made a 7th color study.
Which, I'm guessing, the final product.
That's correct. Yeah, that this is the final figure deco that he came up with after this was the 7th color study. But we did add some details, like the tiger striping. I'm not sure that was even on Ron's color study. I mean, I still kind of reserve the right, like as an art director, to add even more if I want to add more. And so there was a few instances where I did that. Like I had the Vietnamese tiger stripe fatigues added because my dad always had Vietnamese tiger stripe fatigues from when he was in Vietnam. And I also added a little silver belt buckle for the De Oppresso Liber Special Forces seal that I wanted to get on there for my dad as well. I try to put some fun in there beyond what the creative team does.
Do we get to, like, choose the color studies for our figure?
No, because that's not your job, is the short answer. What I will say is Ron Rudat or Mark Pennington are the figure designer. Kirk Bazigian is the art director, right, that gets to review their work and give feedback on it. I am willing for people like yourself that submitted concepts and had them selected to let you guys review Ron's rough work or Mark's rough work and also give us feedback notes at that time. I don't want to overwhelm the designers with too much feedback coming from too many people, but I think if we go ahead and do it at the exact same time where I'm presenting Ron and Mark with feedback from Kirk and feedback from me and feedback from you, for example, I think that's totally acceptable. So I will stay in touch with you guys, the 16 that were selected, And as we move through the creative process, I'll loop you in, but it's going to be that one time.
What I meant by my question was, like, do us, the specific creators, get to choose the specific color studies for our specific character?
That's Kirk Bazikian's job. I will take your feedback and I will pass that along to them. But you do not sit above Kirk Bazikian. Sorry, buddy. I don't sit above Kirk Bazikian either. Look, I just went through this exact same process. I had to take everything Kirk said. I passed it on to Ron as gospel. I didn't say, well, no, I disagree with Kirk here, so I'm not passing that along. I had to trust in the process. And because I remember of the six color studies that Ron submitted, I loved one of them and wanted it to be made just like that. But Kirk gave us feedback and wanted to combine several, and we ended up with something else. And I've gotten a lot of compliments on Rotello's color scheme, so I trust that Kirk did the right thing.
Yeah. Will we, like, get the color studies after they're used or something?
I call you guys the concept creators. I've had another concept creator come to me with a good recommendation, which was if I could provide prints to you guys of that stuff so you could keep it, that'd be cool. I'm totally fine with doing that. What if you've looked at the campaign and if you scroll to the bottom, though, we're selling pre-production as these priceless one-of-a-kind artifacts. So every step of Ron's process is available under one pledge for each figure, right? So, for example, for Shh is going to be a Mark Pennington character, you'll be able to buy, and this is not a pressure situation, ask your mother and father and don't put any pressure on them, but the figure designs, the original sketches, the markup by Kirk Bazikian, the revised artwork, the color studies, the presentation artwork, all of that's going in one bundle called Mark Pennington Design Process, whatever, pre-production. And then another pre-production item is the painting that's going to be created by Doug Hart for each of these characters.
Like, random people from the public could get it, or just the creators?
First come, first serve. Now, what I did, one of the concept creators expressed an interest, like, hey, when you go live, let me know so I can buy the character art for my character. And so I did that, and so he did buy that.
Okay.
And that's really just to offset the creative budget, because up front, out of pocket, we're paying around $8,500 for, you know, all the illustration work, the painting work, the package work, the file card, the art design, the art direction, et cetera. So that's a way to offset $3,000 of that cost.
Will there be, like, file cards on the back?
Oh, yeah. Written by Larry.
Do we get to, like, choose the file name and stuff?
I reserve that right for Larry as well. But whatever you guys want to provide him with, you should get into me sooner than later. It should have been part of your submission. So if you still want to get some additional information in there on you need to do it quickly.
Yeah, I submitted that stuff.
Sweet. Then you're good to go. It'll go to Larry.
What made you think to, like, open up to the community to have people design characters and actually get their characters chosen?
The experience that I had from the spring of 2020 through to the summer of 2022, we've been working on this thing for a while. But there was so many different steps with so many different people involved, and it was a longer process because of, you know, I was driving things around through COVID and things like that to shoot with everybody. We won't be doing that with every single figure going forward. Long story short, it was such a pleasant experience for me to watch a concept that I had as a kid come to life through the hands of these creators, that I wanted other people in the community to have that awesome experience. Like, you're not going to forget this. You're going to grow up thinking about, man, I had the actual creators of G.I. Joe take my figure idea and flesh it out, and now I can hold it in my hands. That's unbelievable. And to me, you're the reason that I did that. You're the reason I came up with this. That moment when I met you and you know, you realized yours was selected and everything, you know, that was the most special part of Joe Fest weekend for me, was meeting the four of you that had your concepts selected. Like, y'all were all just so happy. It's just me trying to share the love, man, like, share the joy. The experience that I had was so amazing. I want you to have that experience.
How long will it take for us to get the figures?
Manufacturing, as you know, is a long process, and we're not even starting manufacturing until we go through the creative development process with the creative team. So that process starts now, right? Because we're basically knocking on the door of funding the first wave. So they can immediately start on the first wave. I'm relatively confident. I mean, we're steamrolling. We're going to do fine. What we have said on the Kickstarter is that we're looking at winter of 2023 for product to be in hand. But this isn't going to be one of those Kickstarters where you're waiting a year and a half with nothing happening. We're going to be documenting the creative process along the way, sharing that with the community and getting you guys kind of involved throughout the process. So you should have a lot of fun with the Kickstarter leading up to the point where you have action figures in hand. Also leading up to having action figures in hand, we're planning on having the Blu-ray and the book done by the summer of next year, right? So that, because if you think about it, the creative process is done by then. So we get through the creative process with the team, then I turn all of that documentation into a book and I turn all that filming that we did into a DVD, and you guys can have that in hand and be enjoying that while this stuff is at the factory getting worked on and getting manufactured.
Wait, so it's gonna be literally a 40-hour disc?
No, it's not gonna be 40 hours. You can't hold that much footage, but where you got the 40 hours from was I shot over 40 hours worth of interviews and documentation with these guys over the last 2 years. I'm doing the process of whittling, like your dad was talking about with the podcast. They might record 3 hours, but then he whittles it down to a good hour. It's my responsibility as an editor to make it entertaining to watch. And so that's part of the whittling process and adding graphics to it, adding cutaways to visuals, that kind of stuff.
Why did you choose Joe Fest to, like, reveal the characters in the panel? Why did you choose them?
Last year, I revealed Rotello at Joe Fest.
Yeah.
This year, I revealed the 16 selections for Operation Recall. It's just what I like to do. It's my best opportunity of the year to meet people in person and show them all the crazy stuff I've been working on. So, I mean, I basically go throughout the year working on these things, and that's the best opportunity I have to meet the most people in one place at one time. It's also like really reinvigorating to be in a room full of people that are supportive of the work that I'm doing.
Yeah. Another good place is Assembly Required.
I know, I need to make it there. So my friend Brian Sauer runs Assembly Required.
I've met him.
So I love the design work he does for that show, and I really need to make it out to that show. He's turning it into a two-day, multi-day convention this year, and so I've promised that I'll be there this year. Because it's a long way for me to travel just for one day.
I'm trying to convince my dad to let him bring me.
Nice. Good luck.
What are the stretch goals?
Wave 1 is 120. Wave 2 is 240. Wave 3 is 360. Wave 4 is 480. If we unlock through wave 4, that the 18th figure is just a bonus figure. There's no additional funds needed. It's going to be exciting. I hope we get there, man. I hope we get there.
Yeah. Why did you choose the team you had specifically? Like, there were some other people you could have chosen.
I think to me, Kirk Bazygian is the brand manager for G.I. Joe. Yes, there were other brand managers that followed him.
Yeah.
But he was there from 82 to 86 and then 90 to 94. He was there the most. So he deserved to be the art director kind of brand manager.
He skipped what? 3 years? Four?
Yeah, because they took him off and put him on other stuff. He was doing Hasbro Direct and like Play School Baby or some other. I know. But that's what happens at these big companies. They put you where they need you. So Kirk had to be the brand manager. He had to oversee the line. Ron Rudat was the first figure designer and the most prolific. He did about 115 figures. So it's a no-brainer that I looped him in first. Now, Mark Pennington followed him and did a good 3 years worth of figures. So when we decided that we were actually going to go forward with Operation Recall, I quickly looped in Mark Pennington to get him on board the team as well. Doug Hart is the painter that painted the majority of packaging from 87 to 94. Hector Garrido is unfortunately no longer with us.
Yeah.
So Doug Hart is the man for painting G.I. Joe figures. He was a no-brainer. The packaging guy that I had developed the Operation Recall brand is Ed Morrill, and he was the packaging guy from 1969 to 1989, their biggest, you know, kind of external vendor that helped them with logo design and packaging design. And he helped him through Adventure Team, Super Joe, the 1982 relaunch, the 1986 brand refresh, and everything in between. So he's the guy. He hired the illustrators and managed them. He gave them thumbnail sketches to work from. And so Ed Morrill's the man. His son, Sean Morrill, is also a packaging expert. And so Sean and Ed and I teamed up to develop the branding and packaging for Operation Recall. Larry Hama, of course, who else would I ask to write the dossiers?
It's a no-brainer.
They're all no-brainers. You know, they're the guys that did this originally. And I'm just incredibly lucky that they're all still here and with us and active and engaged and wanting to be a part of it. It's amazing. It's lightning in a bottle.
When will the Kickstarter end?
August 7th. So I wanted to give it at least 30 days. I honestly got this Kickstarter in last Friday, but Kickstarter had taken Friday off because they're doing 4-day work weeks. And then they were off for Monday for the July 4th. I really, really wanted this to go live over July 4th weekend, and we just missed it. But they got me live 2 days later. No complaints.
So it launched specifically the day of recording that we're recording this?
Yes, absolutely. It launched this morning at 10 a.m. It's now 5:20 p.m. and we are at $101,586. We're pushing up on that, on hitting our goal for wave one.
If we designed one, would we get like a free one or something?
Yes.
Of the character?
Yes. When you submitted your concepts, basically the agreement was 5 signed copies of the manufactured figure. So you guys are going to get 5 signed copies of
Sweet. Do we get to meet the creators and discuss our character?
No. It's too much to manage. I mean, just getting emails back and forth from the 16 of you guys and getting headshots and contact info or what you want your name as you want it to appear on the package has been a logistical challenge. So I would say
I get it.
The only communication that I'm willing to facilitate throughout the creative process is when Ron and Mark are done with their initial design concepts. I'm happy to have you guys review and give us your revisions notes, and I will provide those along with Kirk Bazigian's revision notes and my revision notes. Yep. So you'll be in the creative process at that point, but that'll be the only point.
Okay. Will there be like merchandise for Operation Recall?
I mean, there's got to be, right? We got to have t-shirts and hats, you know.
Hoodies.
Maybe USB drives, you know, belt buckles. What do you want? I think hats, I mean, obviously hats and t-shirts are a no-brainer.
Yeah.
Hoodies are cool, too. They're usually a higher price point. I've done some 3D Joe stuff, like this hat right here is embroidered. But I put it out there, and, like, people don't buy much of it. So it is what it is. I'll make it available. But usually, like, the vendor that I use, I only have, like, $5 in there for me. But they're still going to charge, like, $30-$40 for an embroidered hat, for example. It's just, if anybody's got any cheaper solutions out there for embroidered merchandise, I'd be happy to hear it. But yeah, I look forward to making some Operation Recall merch and wearing that stuff around. I got to keep up with my homies at RoboSkull. They got some awesome merch right now.
Yeah.
Did you see them at JoeCon? They have awesome hats and shirts. Yep. I got to get on it.
I already have a hat.
Nice.
He first said it after we had dinner with Ron and Jenny. But then he said it again after your panel. He was like, I want to be a toy designer when I grow up.
Oh, nice.
And he's never, ever had job aspirations. He's never wanted to be a veterinarian or an archaeologist or, you know, all the shit you and I wanted to be as kids, right? He didn't want to do any of that. This is the first time he's had a job aspiration. I went, you literally know 8 people in this room, in this 40,000 square foot space that are legitimate toy designers. You should be asking questions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think people tend to answer those things pretty candidly.
There's so many different ways to go about it if that's what you want to do. You sat with Ben, Mark, Paul, Troy, John, Duffy, like all weekend.
Right, right. Like,
you have access. I didn't look at his questions. I don't know what all he asked you. If I ask you something that he's asked, it's more from an adult perspective. Just kind of jumping in. I didn't submit because I wanted to clear the field for A.
Sure, sure.
He was hyped on it. I was too, but...
Watching it happen through your kids' eyes is better than having it happen to yourself, I'm sure.
You say that, and this is where I was going with that, is that when I saw these grown men in the room, and I'm not going to name any names. Uh-huh. We all know who they were. They know who they were. And I'm certainly not denigrating. When I saw them tear up and cry because their designs got chosen, I was like, damn, I'm an asshole for not putting in. I should have submitted too.
I mean, you miss every shot you don't take is what I would say.
I didn't take them because I wanted to clear the field for Alexander. But seeing these grown men tear up, that that Ron and Mark and Kirk and Doug, like, chose them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I know you didn't choose them. You were part of the team, not the team.
Right.
Seeing them get misty. You know, I'm misty because I'm dadding up, but they're misting because it's theirs. And I was like, whew.
Yeah, it was truly special, man. Being able to unveil that and have four of you guys there, you know, that were recipients of this honor that these legends have selected your work to actually turn it into something. It was awesome, dude. It stole the weekend for me. It was by far, you know, the best moments of the of Joe Fest were the reveals to the, you know, contributors.
Alexander is a part of this podcast anytime. A, he wants to be, and B, he takes notes. When I told him that I was going to record with you, he immediately stopped what he was doing, put down the toys, and took notes.
That's awesome.
And he's never taken this many notes.
Awesome.
You have helped these other creators like Ron, like Troy and John, like Ben and Mark, like Spoon and Duffy. You helped spark something in him that you and I were sparked.
Yep. As kids.
Had the same spark, but our spark came from going to JCPenney, Sears, Walmart, Target, Hills, wherever in the country you were, right?
Yep.
You were in the Southeast, I'm in the Northwest, so we were probably going to different stores.
Right.
But that was our spark, you know, and I wanted to draw comics, and I drew a lot of characters and gave them to Mom and asked her to send them in. She claims she did, but I never got a letter from Hasbro.
So for whatever reason, I sent mine into Hasbro direct mail. So maybe that helped me in getting a rejection letter. Like maybe if I sent it to Hasbro's central office, I might never have seen it again. But direct mail, if you remember, was the thing that Kirk pioneered in the mid to late 80s. He got that kind of off the ground. And he was working with the DDBO to do all the custom mail order stuff for Hasbro Direct. And I must have ordered something through Hasbro Direct, received something from them, wrote down that address, and then sent my letter into that. So that's how I ended up getting it back with the nice letter. I
always just assumed that she just kept them or threw them away or whatever, but they never got mailed.
Right.
But as you said, maybe it was because you mailed Hasbro Direct versus some front office.
Mm-hmm.
Before I heard your story, before I knew about Rotello, I had asked Ron, kind of in the early days of knowing him, did mail from kids ever make it around the office, like fan drawings or fan creations? And he was like, no, never saw anything like that.
Bill Merkline, the sculptor, told me a story of one of his neighborhood kids giving him an idea for an aircraft carrier. And he submitted that to Roger Avery, who was managing sculpture at the time. And Roger came back not very happy about it. He was like, do not do this. We cannot take this. So they definitely, like, they towed the line. They did not take ideas from kids. And what they told me on that was we have neither reviewed nor copied, something to that effect. But still, the paperwork had all kinds of stains on it, coffee, butter, whatever. On multiple pages, there was multiple stains. And so I was like, I'm not buying it that nobody reviewed it. It sat on somebody's desk.
You know, Marvel and DC have done that for years. Hey, your fan art is great, but we're not taking your superhero submission. We can't review it.
Right.
So it doesn't surprise me as an adult.
Right.
That they have this sort of legal line in the sand, whether or not, you know, there were coffee and donut stains on your paperwork.
I totally get the legalities of it. You don't want to be in this murky situation. And that's why on the subscription page, I was like, if you don't send in this paragraph with your entry, we can't consider it.
Yeah. It from just an outside perspective, you read that legalese on your thing and you're like, ooh, that's a little aggressive. And then you're like, well, I guess it makes sense because if I submit something to you, then I'm yelling at you for money.
Right. No, there can be no question, right? Like, I just didn't want anybody to come back and say, well, I want some royalties for the idea. It's just, there's not the budget for that. Like, we're already raising $8,500 for the creative team and then $30,000 for manufacturing. So, okay, so how much am I going to owe each person that sent in the concept? The easier answer was just, you know, honestly, like, the candid response is that I've invested $20,000 of my own money to make this happen. And the least I could ask of anybody else is if you have awesome ideas that you want to see brought to life by this creative team, just sign them over, right? Yes. Just sign them over. Just don't ask for any money. Just be like glad it's going to happen.
Yeah, you get your five figures. They're signed by the creative team. You can cut one off the card and you know, frame the signed card, or you can just frame the whole damn thing. You can give one to your grandparents.
If you want some money, you can flip them on eBay. Do whatever you want to do.
I was having lunch with my dad, and I'm telling him about this experience because after Alexander left the room, you know, he was raring to go, but you called all the submitters up and were like, I want to take pictures with each of you, yada, yada, yada. So you slowed him down for a minute. You know, he's got one of those watches. He immediately runs out of the room, calls his mom, tells her.
Awesome.
As soon as he hangs up, he calls my dad, tells my dad. So we have lunch and he's like, you know, I don't know. The room is loud. I'm trying to understand. I don't understand that he's going to have an action figure, but like, explain it to me.
Right.
Without, you know, the noise of 40,000 square foot and 4,000 or 5,000 people shopping. So I'm explaining it to him and he was like, are there a lot of indie creators? And I was like, I don't know, maybe there's maybe like 20 or 30. And then stop and I think, and I get online and I was like, no, there's a couple hundred indie toy companies. There's a lot. And especially if you start jumping scale, but And he was like, well, how much does that cost? And I was like, well, up front, it's 30 grand to start, but then you kickstart. He's like, you 30 grand before you ask for funding? I was like, sure. You've got to get your idea. You've got to get your sculpting. You've got to get your, you got to get to the point where you don't have just a piece of text on Kickstarter saying, I promise you I have cool ideas. Can I have 80 grand?
No, it's like any business. You're going to have to invest in it up front. And I honestly wasn't thinking of this as a direction that I was headed with the Rotello experience. It was just going to be documenting. I was going to do these interviews. So I wanted to do documentarian experiential interviews where they were doing what they do so well, which is make action figures. And I was literally thinking about it from a documentarian perspective. I was thinking video and I was thinking a chapter in the big omnibus hardcover. And the idea just grew and to where it was too big to be attached to that book, which is already monstrous. Like, just cut that off and let it be its own thing. And so that's where we're headed, man. It's its own thing. And it is. It's evolved into the Operation Recall brand and up to 18 figures. And I mean, who knows what happens after that?
Personally, I can tell you that what I hope happens after that is year two.
Yeah.
Series two. Another 18 figures. Another card back where, you know, you had 177 submissions from over 100 different members of our community. What I hope is that the success of this drives another 200 people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we keep these retirees at work.
Busy.
For as long as they're interested.
Exactly. As long as they're engaged and having fun, why would we not want these veterans creating awesome, all new stuff for us? Like, how many, you know, Snake Eyes version 2 recreations do we need? How about we get a Rotello, a radio teletype operator with a carrier pigeon? We never had that. Let's do something new. And so that's the fun of this. And as long as they're willing to do it, and as long as the community is getting behind it and helping us come up with the budget, because if you read the budget, 120 isn't funding all of Wave 1. I'm personally funding a good percentage of Wave 1 despite raising 120, right?
Yeah.
So that's me gambling, basically, being willing to invest in this business to believe that, yes, if the Kickstarter backers just help us get this manufactured, they've got some skin in the game. We'll say a little more than 2/3 of the skin in the game. I'm still willing to have a third in the game. The Kickstarter will help us fund it. And again, I'll make up the money on the back end because I believe in it and I want it to happen and I want to be part of it and I want to facilitate it for these guys to keep them busy and active and productive and making cool stuff that we'll all enjoy.
All of my friends and family that have their own businesses, they've all kind of said the same thing you said, but a little more crass of a banner of assume the risk, reap the reward. So you're putting in the time, the effort, and then the capital.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a risk because if this doesn't fund, then you still get the reward of you have this crazy two-up of Rotello and you have all of these things that you've done with the creators of our childhood that you're now friends with.
Yeah.
But if it does fund, we all reap the reward because we all helped with that risk.
That's right.
When I'm looking at the way you structured this, it threw me off at first because it's just Wave 1, but then All In is 18 characters.
Yeah.
And so I had to go back and reread a couple different times. And it looks like 120 grand is that's how fast this plane needs to get off the tarmac.
Mm-hmm. That's Wave 1. That just gets us up in the air. But we want to keep climbing.
And we absolutely want to keep climbing.
We want to get to 480. That's where we want to get to.
That's exactly where I'm going. If you're willing to talk about it, the way you structured the sentence, it looks like 120 gets us off the ground. And every 30 grand is basically
one more figure,
a large portion of one figure.
That's right.
And so 480 being all 16 plus the two,
mm-hmm.
and then the book and the Blu-ray are assumed cost of Carson's that we can then purchase from you. And that money goes not back to you, not back to make you solvent, but back to the creators to help fund the retiree lifestyle of people that are back on the grind.
Yeah.
From a backer perspective, does that mean, like, if we get to 180, is that six characters and then the rest of wave two goes to the next Kickstarter? Or do you keep that? Are you keeping the waves locked? So you got to hit 240 to get the first two waves. Anything between 120 and 240 just pushes wave two to the next Kickstarter.
The short answer is if we get to 180, we're unlocking two more over wave one. So you'll have Rotello, you'll have wave one, and you'll have those two for a grand total of seven.
Okay. And then everything else will kind of get repackaged for when we do this again.
Yep.
Because I'm assuming that this isn't something that you're just going to be like, well, it didn't work, and walk away. This is, you're in this too far.
Yeah, I mean, why would we stop? You know, this basically, it's deciding the threshold or the tolerance of investment from the community. I know what my threshold for investment is. You know, I've already put 20 on it. I think I've said that publicly on multiple occasions. And I'm willing to invest in the figures according to the budget that I shared, which is fully transparent, right? So I think it's around 15 per figure that I'll be on the hook for. I'm willing to do that because I'll also be sitting on the inventory that's left over. And so I just have confidence that we'll make that up on the back end.
I do too, by the way.
Thank you. I just need to know that the community actually wants this to happen. And by saying I need to know the community wants it to happen, I need the community to show me that they want it to happen by being willing to pony up some of their own investment. I'm ponying up a ton of investment.
Yeah, you are.
So yeah, I mean, when some people come to me and they're like, well, why did you do an all-in? I'll be honest with you. My buddy Ben Conway has been advising me on this whole thing. And he's like, some people just want to look at a Kickstarter, assess where the all-in is, put their money on that and walk away and not have to worry about it, not have to monitor a dozen updates and not just have to sweat it. They just want to know, okay, whatever this thing makes, I'm going to get one of everything. And so that's why the all-in came right up front, where it's like, this is all in for 18 figures. That was Ben's advice. And it's good advice. I think that's very true. There are some people in the hobby that just want to read it once and be done with it.
I have personally backed, I don't know the exact number, but it's over 200 Kickstarters.
Wow.
I like what I like. I'm a book collector as well as a toy collector, and I have a lot of friends in the comic book industry. I've Kickstarted a lot, and I tend to treat Kickstarters. I've Kickstarted enough where I'm like, you know what? The money's been taken out of my account. When it shows up, it's a happy surprise.
Mm-hmm.
With toy Kickstarters, it is a little different. If you read your updates, you get really neat behind the scenes things. With toys, you get to see the line drawings. For you, since you're doing the old style of two ups,
mm-hmm.
we're getting to see hard copies and paint masters.
Yeah.
And the fusion of the old guard with two ups and the new guard with 3D printed or 3D designed equipment.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really neat fusion. It's a really neat collaboration of the old and the new for an aesthetic of, are you in your late 30s to early 50s? Boom.
Yeah.
So I do understand that. And Ben is incredibly intelligent at business and at toys. It's no surprise to me that he's advising you. I've talked to so many in this community of creators that they're all in bed with each other because it's better for everybody to build, you know, link arms and lift the next person up than it is to be competitive and try to push each other down.
I think we all want each other to succeed.
Absolutely.
You know, and so when I started talking to John and Troy about theirs, Call Sign Longbow, I very much was like, dude, if we could potentially share molds, but definitely share engineering in the buck and the construction style to make sure that these are completely compatible figures, I'm on board. They're very much trying to nail that 80s 3 3/4, you know, visual language. And so I feel like theirs are going to fit seamlessly with my collection, and Operation Recall is going to fit seamlessly with my collection. I mean, it's designed by the same guys and sculpted by the same guys that did it back in the day. The level of detail that you're going to see in these guys, it's going to be very comparable to what you received back in the day.
I had that conversation with J.E. Russell, who does Chicken Fried Toys.
Mm-hmm.
He and I were talking about, and I don't know if you have one yet, but Eagle Force put out a Riot Commando O-ring figure.
I do have it.
And, you know, he likes it, but it's too modern.
There's construction differences, like the neck. So the neck going up to the ball joint where the head sits on top of it.
The double neck, yes.
So that takes it out of the vintage language for me.
I think for him, it was more about the crispness of details.
Okay, yep.
Honestly, I like the double neck on an O-ring figure. It's a neat, kind of like swivel wrists. It's a neat update. It's not an unnecessary one. But he was talking about the Christmas of details, and I was sharing with him, you know, at AR last year, when, like, there's a 20-minute conversation on pancake ears. That is what I'm really excited about, looking at your blending of old and new, that this equipment is very modern.
Right.
Figure is very...
very vintage.
Very vintage.
Yeah.
And the fact that you're now, like... working with Grindstone Toys, either as, you know, with consulting or trying to match aesthetic or share mold, as you said, that just makes it even more compelling, more interesting. If this doesn't hit 500,000 or more, like, the community is really sleeping. I've seen all of the designs, you know, and the inspiration designs, obviously not yeah. Mark and Ron's, but Ron is... without question, the largest designer of G.I. Joe figures. Mark is probably number two, at least in terms of what made it into print and visual media.
Oh, yeah, because 86 to 89. Yeah. I mean, after that, you got Kurt Groen, who was extremely productive as well. But, you know, he got a little bit of his stuff in the Deke series, but that was about it. To your question about the pancake ears, you'll see it. They're very vintage style.
I noticed that at Joe Fest. I noticed that when you showed it to me just now. I bring up pancake ears because it's something that, like, there's a lot of stuff we were talking about in terms of, like, the vintage aesthetic. But that one is, anybody can pick up a character. Anybody can grab Flint and see exactly what we're talking about very quickly. So it's kind of a shortcut for people that don't, that haven't paid attention to vintage versus a modern aesthetic at the 3¾ scale.
And that's because that mold line came up the side, went right behind the ears, and it had to release out of the mold. So the mold was pulled apart from the front and from the back. And if you had any indentions going into the ear and creating shape in there, the plastic would have poured into those indentions and it wouldn't release from the mold. So it's a technical consideration that was the impetus for the pancake ears.
Since you're doing a two-up, how do you guys go from two-up back down to 3¾ in the modern age? I mean...
I believe it's called Pantograph. Yeah, so they're going to be having to do that in China. I'll be mailing
them. Really?
Yeah. Yep.
So someone is willing to go to the expense of grabbing one of those old-ass machines and doing it? Or do they still do that in modern...
They're not completely retired yet, is my understanding.
Oh, that's so much better, because I assumed that they were going to be taking light beams.
This is what will be going to the factory. I don't think 3D scanning is there yet. In terms of replicating that level of detail.
I mean, for me, it's just another sign of how well you have set this project up.
It's archaic. We're doing the analog way, but that's, to me, that's what's going to create the end result that is recognizable as vintage. You know what I mean? It's the only way to get there is do it the way they did it. And to your point, I'm willing to do 3D designed and molded and printed accessories and going a little more detailed with that. I'm totally fine with that. If you look at some of the accessories we started to get in the early 90s, they got pretty complex. Like if you look at Bullhorn's rifle case mm-hmm. and the rifle that breaks down into multiple pieces, they got pretty complex with their accessories. But the figures kind of kept that same visual language that you're talking about, where everything's hand molded, hand sculpted, and you're not going to go beyond a certain level of crispness. You're not going to go in there and see, like, nobody was in here with an X-Acto knife putting these little details in. Whereas when you are 3D molding, working in a computer, you're much more precision detailed than you are doing something by hand. I love the fact that these pockets are asymmetrical. That would have never happened.
Oh, wow.
You know, if you were doing that digitally, you would have created one of those pockets and you would have copied it from the one cheek and pasted it on the other cheek, and it would have been perfectly matched. And that's honestly what a pair of blue jeans might look like. But having it done by hand, it creates that, the human imperfection element.
Everything you're saying just makes me more excited for this. You have a pretty decent turnaround time, December 23, as the estimated, estimated, which is a pretty tight turnaround, all things considered. You know, you already have your production numbers. You already have your plan in place. This is a vintage run come modern. You know, aside from the toy, we all love the toy, but I am a book person.
Nice.
I have two complete sets of your books.
Is that just one set, keep pristine? And do you put like a post-it note on it? Like, don't touch these sets. Like, how do you keep that separated?
Honestly, one set is in Alexander's bedroom on his bookshelves.
Oh, I love it.
And one set is in the library on the main bookshelves.
That's amazing.
And he will pull from where the hell he pulls from.
I mean, obviously, I'm a fan of bookshelves as well.
They're so much better than other forms of furniture.
I like how you can partition them out and do different things on different levels, right? So you'll see I've got like statues and then comic books and then TVs running stuff and then loose toys with dioramas and then books at the bottom.
I'm struggling with the whole idea of having TVs in the background because I wouldn't get anything done. I would just stare at the TVs.
You don't look at it. It's behind you. That's just to distract people that I talk to. It's kind of funny because I do video and animation for a living. And so when people call me, they're like, they want to talk about my background. And I'm like, look, I've been working from home since 2015. I've had a little more time to get into this than you guys have.
Yeah, I've been working from home for a long time. I don't have quite the display you have. I have like the Walmart file cards and all my Steel Brigade file cards behind me. So in meetings, I'm just waiting for one person, just one, to be like, is that G.I. Joe back there?
Is that the Walmart file card set from 1991? You're like, what? You know that?
I don't even care if they understand what it is. Yeah. I just want them to be like, is that G.I. Joe back there?
Right. Did you see, so we got our hands on two of the Kodachromes for the uncut paintings for the Walmart file cards.
No, I didn't see that.
So those will be in the book. That's going to be exciting.
Nice. That's one of the things that I love the most about Jody Classified.
Mm-hmm.
They always bring different things every year. You might see the same thing two or three years in a row, but you always see something new as well. Their booth this year at Joe Fest was incredible. And then, not just were they focused on vintage, but they had a corner dedicated to Operation Recall.
That's right. So I've been good friends with those guys for many years. I wholeheartedly support their mission. A lot of them were associated with or affiliated with Yo-Jo. And so when Yo-Jo got frozen, there was a lot of discussions kind of behind closed doors about, okay, well, what's next for the community? We were in conversations, you know, do we take the Yo-Jo assets, the 3D Joe's assets, start something new, or do we just prop up and beef up 3D Joe's? And we ended up going with the latter. And they have been kicking a lot of assets my way to build out the pre-production portion of 3D Joe's. And literally the only challenge there is finding the bandwidth, the man hours, to build the pages. Yeah, well, we do a lot of image editing too. We don't ever just throw things up on 3D Joe's. We like to go into Photoshop and perfect it as much as possible before putting it up, because we know, like, once we build that page, the likelihood of us going back and revising those assets is pretty slim to none. We like to keep moving forward, not doubling back and redoing what we've already done before. So we want to do it right the first time. So if you look under pre-production and then go under figures, you'll see a couple dozen figure pages that have been fleshed out with some assets that I was able to gather, but with a lot more assets that came from the folks at Jody Classified. And so we've had a collaborative relationship for the last couple years, I would say, and we've had friendships many years longer than that. So I totally support those guys. And, you know, Jody Classified was more than happy to kind of keep an eye on my little table of stuff at the outskirts of the Jody Class booth.
I can tell you they did more than just keep an eye on it. I mean, when people were looking, they came by and explained it and walked them through it.
Which is awesome.
They talked about Rotello and Operation Recall in the same sort of way as they would talk about anything vintage. Maybe not with the same reverence of something they've loved for 40 years.
Sure.
But certainly with the same care and concern that D-Class does with everything.
Well, they respect the heck out of the creators, and they know that this is a project that's spearheaded by me, but it only happened because of the creators involved. And so I think that creates that reverence. You know, we all love and appreciate what these guys gave us, and the fact that they're now going to have a chance to give us a little more is awesome. I think we could all get behind that.
I love hanging out with those guys, whether on the floor or at Lobby Bar Con. I messed up with them. I was helping Greg Berger out, who is the voice of, you know, Spirit and Firefly, but he was also the voice of Ripcord, Moto Viper, and Cutter. And so somebody mentioned that the Cutter 2-Up was over at Classified. And so he was like, well, I don't know what that is. Jason, can you show me? I absolutely can. And right as we walk up to the glass, the whole area is filled with people. They're getting ready to do their giveaway of Sightline.
The raffle. Yeah.
We look at it for a second. He marvels. He looks around a little bit. And then we retreat. And then at BarCon, I was telling a couple guys that. And they all went, dude, we would have paused.
I mean, it would have been awesome to get a photo of Greg Berger holding Cutter. That would have been maybe next year.
Mea culpa.
Maybe next year.
He normally does a lot of Transformer stuff because he's Grimlock also. But I think this is his first time doing a Joe show.
That's awesome.
He was really impressed by the G.I. Joe community and the crowd of Joe Fest, by Ed and by Destro's Toy Den and everybody else that helped him.
Real quick, was he sponsored as well by Destro's Toy Den?
He was.
That's awesome. That's a really interesting model for the show to help get more creators there by having vendors sponsor different creators. I think that's an awesome idea. We did that for Ron Rudat at JoeCon back in Orlando several years ago. Dan and I went in together. And for shows, you know, that are up and coming and don't have a tremendous budget to pay for flights and hotels, it's a brilliant way to get more creators there.
And honestly, I would love to see Doug Hart show up at one of these.
Yes, I agree.
Bill Merkline, like...
Bill came to Springfield. That was right after Gary had passed away. And Gary and Jared basically discovered Bill, is how he would put it, back in 2010, I believe it was. And so they formed a good friendship. And Bill's the sweetest guy. And Gary helped Bill. Bill had the utmost reverence for Gary. And so when Gary passed away, he was invited to JoeCon and he came that year and he had a blast. He really enjoyed it. It's not that he like hated his time there, but he was like, I think once was enough though.
Not for us.
Yeah, I know, because there's different people there every year and not everybody got to meet Bill Merkline. And he is such an amazing man, like a wonderful storyteller, super intelligent and like interested in all these different facets of life that I found fascinating. But you'll all meet him through the documentary because I filmed, you know, I was there in his house on 17 different days that he worked on the figure. I was only there for maybe 15 or 14 of them. You know, I basically say I lived in his house for 2 weeks and I did.
That's incredible.
Living upstairs, having breakfast, lunch and dinner with him. And I never got tired of his company. He showed me old movies that I'd never seen before. You know, we talked about military history and airplanes and just all kinds of good stuff, different topics.
You now have a dozen granddads and dads.
Right. So you'll meet him through the documentary, though. You get more intimate time with Bill Merkline than probably anybody else on the creative team.
That's beautiful.
Doug, I think we might be able to get him at one of these shows. He's feeling the love, man. The fact that he's been plugged back into the community over the last couple of years. He's painted Rotello for me. He's done two paintings for RoboSkull, and he's done one painting for Callsign Longbow, and they intend to use him for every other painting. So all of their figures are going to have Doug Hart paintings, and mine are all going to have Doug Hart paintings as well. So he's feeling the love right now. He's plugged back in. And that's what's so cool about this project and the fact that Callsign Longbow decided to engage with him and Ben with RoboSkull decided to engage with him. He's feeling loved right now.
That's amazing.
He's having the time of his life, man. He's excited about it. Every time I talk to him, he's thrilled.
You mentioned that it's not just the senior moral, but he's brought in his son to help with this.
That's right.
So now we have two generations of creators.
Yep.
Like it's just this really is a special project when you start to break down this level of we're doing it in an old school fashion. The community is invited to participate. People outside of our community are welcome to kickstart to support the people they love that are now a part of this because this isn't just a one person, right?
Yeah. The guy that created Breacher, for example, he's Wave 1, Figure 1. He just backed for 15 copies because all of his friends and family want a copy of Breacher. And why wouldn't they?
That's the conversation I've had with my dad is like, listen, you back for one. And as this goes further, you back for more. Or you all in. And no matter what happens, when this ends, they charge your card. In a couple of months, you'll get your backer kit. And in your backer kit, you add as much as you want.
That's right.
He's like, so I could just have 15. I was like, you could just have 15 of the one. You could just get the whole wave, put them all together.
and be able to tell some stories with it, which I think is optimal.
Tell your mom to do the double all in. Now tell your grandpa to do the double all in. All right, that's six.
That's how we get to 480 right there.
Right. I know it's too soon to ask that question, but it's something to think about is once you get to the backer kit, if it doesn't hit 480, whether or not you push forward and continue to fund through the backer kit, or if you just push it to the next Kickstarter. But
Call Sign Longbow just did the exact same thing, and I was happy that they did. So I was a double all-in backer on Call Sign Longbow, and they unlocked 11 figures, is that correct, during the campaign?
10 or 11, yeah.
But they were going to give us a plus one, right, to help us with the value on our all-in. And so what they unveiled at JoeFest was that the Russian ninja that everybody wanted was going to be unlocked. So this is like their uniform. They just unlock things when they want to, and I love that about their campaign. That gave me the idea for Rotello being an unlock right out of the gate, and the 18th figure being an unlock as soon as we unlock wave four, figure 18 just happens.
Beautiful.
So they unlocked the red ninja, and they told us you can actually use your plus one for that.
Yes.
So great. That means I get the figure that I want, and I don't even have to throw any more money in. That's awesome. If we can make the numbers work, I want to do stuff like that during the backer kit too. I would love to unlock figures that didn't technically unlock during the campaign if financially it makes sense to do so, if we're able to do that.
Unfortunately, we're in the world we're in, and it's all about the finances. And it's why we don't just open a business and hope that people buy our toys. We go to the Kickstarter. We ask the community to be involved.
Yeah. Yeah. Even the big businesses are doing it. You know, even billion-dollar companies are saying, well, we think this, you know, 1/12 scale tank will do pretty well, but let's just test the waters. And then they're like, holy shit, it's going $2.5 million in 24 hours. Okay, I think the tank is a hit.
Yeah, good for them for doing it, because we get something that we're never going to get on a Target shelf. But I'm much more interested in seeing personal creators, indie creators, personally risking cash creators,
yep,
be able to use that model to drum up the community and drum up the funds so that they can get off the ground so we can start moving.
Yeah.
So we can start seeing toys.
As a creator that's done 7 Kickstarters, I just want to interject this really quick. Thank you to everybody that has backed the 7 previous Kickstarters, because every time I do one of these, you guys are reinforcing that you have good ideas that are worth pursuing. You know, because professionally you can feel a little irresponsible by chasing your dreams as opposed to servicing your billable clients every day. I have a billable rate, and the number of hours that I put on my real clients is real money that I get to bill at the end of the month. And every hour, every trip that I take to go visit these guys, everything I shoot with them, I'm literally not making a nickel. And so you start to question your sanity when you're a couple years in on it, and you still don't know whether the audience, the community, even wants this. So to come to a day like today where we launch at 10 a.m., here it is, you know, 6:30 at night, and we're at 107, approaching our first big goal of 120, it's fuel in the tank. It's reinvigorating. It basically affirms you're not that crazy after all. Like, other people are going to want this. So just keep chasing those dreams. And
I've been in the comic community for a long time, and one of the things that I always complain with comic book Kickstarter, like comic book creators that kickstart, is they always kickstart just enough to send to their backers. And I was like, that's not a business model. You have to create overage so that you can sell at your table.
Right.
And the toy community is smart enough to do that. I love it, because if I came into the community today, it's too late for me to back RoboSkull.
Mm-hmm.
It's too late for me to back Call Sign Longbow. But I know that once those things hit market and all the backers are fed, I can go to a show, or I can go online, and I can go to Small Joe's or whomever, and I can buy Uptown or, you know, the Wolf Trooper. And I'm very excited to see who comes to Recall after this is done, after the glow of the Kickstarter and the backer kit and all the updates, and we all have our figures in hand. Who's new that we haven't met in our community yet 5 years from now that's going to walk in and be like, what the hell is this? What, a robot pigeon? I have to have this.
I mean, in my opinion, it should be a springboard to starting a company. Right. Like, you know, Boss Fight Studios got their start with their toy business after they let Hasbro by doing a Kickstarter or two. But then they don't really kickstart anymore. They're able to, they've built their name, built their reputation, built their mailing list, and they're able to push things out and take pre-orders through their website and not lose 10% to Stripe and Kickstarter. And they're able to make that model work. So there's several, you know, companies that have been able to use Kickstarter as a springboard to financial solvency. And then they're able to kind of not have to deal with that to get things created. We'll see how it goes for me. I enjoy the Kickstarter model. I truly do. It's a great way to interact with the community. It's a lot of fun. The updates are fun. Having that direct line of communication where people are commenting on your stuff and you're posting these updates. And you, it's fuel in the tank. My love language, my favorite love language is words of affirmation. I'm very self-aware about that. And so Kickstarter just gives me, I mean, there's some salt that comes with it too, but there's way more sweet. There's way more words of affirmation, you know, way more positivity that I get from it than negativity. And so I don't see me abandoning the Kickstarter model. I see me embracing it. And, you know, it's a good way to continue to gauge community interest in the projects we want to do.
Yeah. I like Kickstarter because there is a bit of a real-time feedback loop. The negative people are quicker to reach out, but when you have the positive that's willing to reach out and just, you know, like I saw Grindstone put up a post about your thing and 20 people under it are like, I'm already all in. I'm double all in.
Nice.
With call sign, I did double all in. Three more of all the builders, it'll be fine.
Yeah, no, I want a firing squad. I want four of every bad guy. You know what I mean?
That's the joy. And with Recall, like, who's your builder? Do you have a builder yet?
Yeah. So one of the things I described in the 20X army builder is that we're going to have five bad guy troops. So there's five possible army builders. So if you buy the 20X, that basically gives you a firing squad of all five.
Nice. I didn't review that particular one because it didn't say all in front of the 20X.
Yeah. But you know, you'll be able to add your army builders on the back end.
100%.
Yeah.
There were a couple of things that I hadn't asked you about that I'm dying to ask you about. You know, I told you I'm a book guy. When I was talking to, you know, my dad and Alexander's mom and whoever else, should we do any of the add-ons? I was like, do the add-on of the book. You don't have to. I'll do multiple books in the backer kit. But like, you're doing a Blu-ray and you're doing a book. The book is going to have some transparent pages in it, and it's going to have a deep dive into the process they're using today, but it is truly a glimpse backward into what was used way back when, at a much smaller scale than a billion-dollar company in the 80s.
It's a time capsule.
Tell me about this book, because you have taken a lot of time to do books in the past, and you're clearly an archivist, but what's going on with the book that is special to you?
Yeah. I mean, the Blu-ray is the easy answer. Is it's documentary and filmmaking. It's experiential interviews. It's being there in intimate moments with these people as they're working, in addition to the talking head interviews that supplement the narrative, right? That's what I do for a living, like during the day. And it's amazing to be able to apply that skill set to my hobby in a way that I haven't done yet. So I'm very excited about the documentary. But the book, I've already been building this as we go because I'm so excited about the Rotello project. So there's a hidden page on 3DJoes, 3DJoes.com/Rotello. Password is Yojo2022!
I've read all of it.
Yeah. So that is the book, but that's just one figure, right? So how many figures are we going to get to make, and how many figures am I going to crunch into a 78-page book? Remains to be determined.
Oh, that's amazing.
The book itself is going to document the creative process just like that page does, but for many more figures than just Rotello. My question to you would be, because I've had several people ask me if I was going to do this and I think it's a good idea, would you also like to see ideas that did not make the cut?
Of course.
Would you just like to focus on the 16 or the 18, or would you like to dedicate some pages to the rest of the 177?
I would love to see a dedication to the rest of the 177 because
they gave their time, energy, effort, and talent to it.
Yes, that. Whether they could draw stick figures or whether they could do full-on production-level paintings is largely irrelevant. They took the time.
How do you feel about text-only submissions?
Oh, that's interesting.
A couple people did submit just a page or two or three, or in some cases, very long Word documents.
If a story can be built out of it, right? Because it's easy to build a story out of an image, but building a story out of words is always a little more difficult. The visual is always...
Yeah, picture's worth a thousand words kind of thing.
I love the idea because they all submitted. They took their time and their effort. They put their heart on the line.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And to give back that level of thank you, I think is really neat. And it also, when you do Operation Recall Volume 2 or Series 2, these are the kinds of things that they're looking for. These are the kinds of things that they missed on. But maybe there's something in that 161 that wasn't chosen, but could be tweaked, is a seed of somebody else's inspiration, right? Like, how many times did you build a whole story off of Snake Eyes and Chuckles? Now maybe somebody could look at the 161 and go, wow, I really wish they would have chosen this documentarian action figure that they skipped on. I'm going to write a whole headcanon on this guy.
The creative team actually did pick like a backup reserve 16 that could easily be year two. If they just wanted to go straight into year two, they have figures 17 through 34 or 32 selected.
So that the 161 isn't necessarily off the table.
Right.
It's just paused.
Absolutely not. Like,
that's amazing.
Several people have reached out to me and said, well, I would have liked to know that I didn't get selected. I'm like, well, I can't really say you haven't been selected yet, because we might still grow this beyond the 16 that we've showed.
See, and that just makes it even more incredible to see, even if it's not everyone's full-on submissions, snippets, I think is really a neat thing. As a thank you to everybody that put in their time and effort, and as a reminder to all of us that didn't, whether for noble dad reasons, yank, yank.
Right.
Or for, y'all, screw that guy. I don't know. I don't trust him. You know, wherever you landed in the spectrum between those two extremes, it shows you like, yeah, you know, maybe next time.
Yeah.
Set all that shit aside and let's go.
Because just throw the ideas out and may the best ideas win. Like, you're going to miss every shot you don't take. And if you don't take the shot, you're going to regret it, because what an opportunity to get these legends to take your little nugget of an idea and fully flesh it out. Like, what happened with Rotello, he doesn't look a lot like what I drew when I was 10 years old. And that's totally fine. It's the fact that he was the seed.
Yes.
You know, that idea was the seed that grew into this awesome figure with awesome accessories. Yes, it's got a carrier pigeon. So I nailed that part. You know, he's got a machine gun. It's funny, the machine gun I drew when I was 10 years old had two triggers on it. It had two handles and two triggers, but one barrel. I'm like, how does that work? It was just the fact that the seed of the idea that I planted grew into something amazing. That's what I want all these contributors to come away with, is like, you don't have to nail every degree of execution of your concept. You just need to put an interesting concept out there, because some of the ones they gravitated to, it was unexpected for me. Like, when I looked through the 177, they picked some things that I didn't think were going to percolate to the top. And it's cool. I think most of those were the more fun and wacky ideas, which I'm thrilled about. I think a military adventure, military fantasy line is refreshing. You know, if we want straight military, awesome, authentic stuff, we've got Marauders, man. We've got Vietnam. We've got World War II. We've got awesome customizable Marauder figures. Do that. If that's what you're hungry for, you can collect that. If you want military adventure fun, O-ring style, though, you got Recall. That's kind of the space that we're going to be occupying, I think.
I've always looked at our community and thought it is impressive how many of us went into the military because of our love of G.I. Joe.
There's a lot of them.
I didn't, but I mean, I'm impressed by everyone who did.
Yeah, I didn't either.
And there's a lot of people that were inspired to go into the military because of G.I. Joe. Not because of a dad or an uncle or John Wayne or some other whatever, but G.I. Joe. And I think that's impressive.
I think the United States government should have subsidized G.I. Joe, because it's one of their best recruiting tools.
Yeah. Even saying all of that, it always makes me sad when I hear people do the, you know what G.I. Joe really needs? More realism. Like,
it doesn't.
I can turn on the news for realism. More realism, we don't get Serpentor. We don't get Zartan.
Right. I like the good guys having a degree of reality, but I want my bad guys to just be out there, you know? I mean, I want scary bad guys too, but yes, the shirtless, monocled, crazy scientist that's going to operate on people and torture them, that's interesting, you know? It's going to use the brainwave scanner to turn you against your own people. Like,
I want the Weather Dominator.
Yeah, and you got to have Destro for that, right? The enemy arms guy that's just always going to be coming up with the next big MacGuffin device. So you have to have those characters to have interesting storytelling. I've got one good friend that, man, he just took the initiative. He traveled up to Massachusetts with me for this big 3-day summit. So he is as into these figures as I am. He was there for all 3 days and he was filming and listening, Joe Goldston.
You showed a picture of him sitting in a closet with his gear on.
Yeah, he wasn't in a closet. He was just off to the side.
Sure, sure.
He does look kind of compact.
You shoved him in a box.
So Joe, he's an awesome writer. He's very smart, very clever. When we went down to the JoeCon in New Orleans, we rented a van and it just so happened the van's radio was broken. So we had no music for 16 hours. So on the ride, I believe it was on the ride home, we wrote this skit called Joe's Anatomy, which just showed like the sick bay at the Joe headquarters where Joe's were falling apart and stuff. And it was hilarious. And it was like awesome watching his brain work. And so he came back from this Massachusetts trip and then he went to Joe Fest and he helped live stream that panel. And so he was fully, you know, in it, right? So he was just thinking about it the whole way home. When he got home, he started writing a treatment for, this might be the first comic book or this might be an audio podcast with visuals or it might be a full-blown animation. Who knows what it'll turn into? But it feels like a Marv Wolfman and George Perez introduction to the new Teen Titans, where you're assembling the team and the first issue you meet everybody. You know, it's like 2 to 3 pages.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, I love the way it's going. It's like 2 to 3 pages per character to introduce them, and you get just enough of them to make you want more, and then you want to see them interact as a team and everything because they're all so different. So we haven't gotten around to introducing the bad guys yet. The bad guys are this mysterious force that has done some significant damage. And we're bringing in the characters like we brought in the creators, the legends. Operation Recall is actually the name in the book because we're recalling these old special ops people because this tragedy happens. I don't want to give away too much.
No, I love that.
He's been brilliant with it. And so we've got it in a Google Doc and I've invited a few people and we're hashing it out. And all of this, of course, will be up for, you know, editing and rewriting and whatever when Larry gets his teeth into it.
When you think about comics, I know there's a few creators that have put comics out with their toy lines. Comics in and of themselves, I mean, you could sit down with Jason from Spiro Toys and talk about this. You're $20,000, $30,000 into a comic book.
Yeah.
Writing the script is cheap if you're a writer. If you want art, you can pay $50 for a page of art, but you're not going to use that professionally.
Yeah, it's not going to be great.
You know, so you think 23 pages for one comic, but you're building this out. You need more than one comic. Now you got 65 to 87 pages. That's anywhere from $8,000 to $16,000 just for the line art. That's not even hiring the colorist, the letterers.
Don't forget to pay for publishing and shipping too. Yeah, no, it's crazy.
All of these things are crazy expensive. They all require a lot of capital. And so from a consumer standpoint, especially in today's world, you know, we have all those things as consumers, we have to be patient. Like everybody's taking a couple years these days. So you're walking into a position where people are already, how fast is it going to be? Hopefully 18 months, but you know, maybe if the world decides to shift again.
Hopefully it'll shift back into a better position, but how the hell do we know?
We all hope so. I don't want to be negative about it, but I do want to highlight the investment of effort and risk that not just you, but you and the whole team are taking.
If you see my shoulders slumped, it's because I'm carrying that weight. I do want everybody to know the creative team, they're not being requested to make any financial risk.
Sure. You're hiring them, but they're still taking the risk of time and effort and energy, and they're retirees.
Oh, absolutely. And just believing, right? Like there's this crazy kid that runs an archive and he comes along with this wacky idea of let's make a new figure. But literally when they all got done, they were all like, well, it's kind of too bad that it's over. I had fun with that. We've been pushing each other up this hill. You know what I mean?
But I made friends with Greg Adams, who was an inker and a penciler at Marvel back in the 80s. And this is what I mean by risk, right? And not necessarily the financial. He worked on a number of X titles and Avengers and Captain America. He worked on a lot of things, right? He's one of the many Adamses in the comic industry that have done great things. It destroyed his body leaning over that board to the point where he had to leave the comic industry and he got into computer animation and computer art because it was just physically healthier for him.
Because he could sit back. You know, you could put your shoulders back and sit back in this Aeron. I got an Aeron chair right here. They're super expensive, but worth every penny.
Every dime.
Because they'll save your ability to sit here and float in this chair and just be at a computer.
Correct.
Because I'll be honest, Jason, in the week leading up to this, I had a 22-hour shift. I had a 17-hour shift. I had maybe another 14-hour shift. Like, when you get those moments of creative inspiration, you have to ride that tidal wave, right? So there was one day where I built that 2-minute trailer. And then there was the next day where I edited the 4-minute Kickstarter video. And then there was the next day where I built the Kickstarter campaign. And it's like, you literally, as a creative individual that's producing things, you have to ride that wave when the tide's high and like things are just ready and you're ripping, rolling right through what your goals and objectives are. You just got to stay in it. And so it can be a brutal lifestyle. It really can.
And we're talking about like you doing that at 44.
Right. These guys
are retirees. They're in their 70s and 80s. When I say risk, I don't mean just that, oh, he spent an hour drawing.
Sure.
You know, they're putting their health on those boards and in this idea. And I am truly jealous and in awe and excited for what you're doing.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I was thinking about it to myself because obviously I'm going to be very heavily invested in this financially and like mentally and from a time perspective. And there's nothing else I would rather be doing. The fact that we've finished Rotello, now we're definitely doing 4 more. We're potentially doing a lot more than that. That's all these touch points that I get to have with these guys along the way. That's all that fun I'm going to have watching these come together over time. It's basically like the fun that I had over the last couple of years. I just enabled myself to enjoy that for many, many months going forward.
That's beautiful.
It's all good stuff, man.
That's so beautiful. I truly am excited for all of this to come to fruition, to be able to see Ron and Jenny and talk about this with them, to be able to meet Doug Hart. When Kirk decides to come back to shows, to hear him stand in front of an audience and not just tell the same Joe stories he's told for years, but to tell this story too. I think this is a really neat thing. I appreciate that you had the balls and the liquid to do it, and that you brought the community in. You had a panel, a 3D Joe's panel, but it was focused on Operation Recall. I was rushing back from helping Greg Berger, the voice of Spirit and Firefly. Alexander's on his phone. Dad, where are you? You got to get up here. It's Recall. He's going to tell us when the Kickstarter is going to happen. He doesn't know shit about what you're about to do.
Right.
He knows it's Recall. He knows there's not been a Kickstarter. He knows that he submitted 3 figures to it. I was like, okay. And I came in about 3 or 4 minutes late. You had already given your preamble. You're going through the thing and you put the card back up. And as soon as the card back up, I keyed in and I was like, oh, one of Alexander's characters made it. And I know which one, because he drew all 3 on top of a sketch that Ron Rudat had done for him, which Ron was just basically graciously looking at his stuff and then drew a very quick tipple. It was like, if you use a tipple like this, you can put detail in your characters.
Which is what Ron did, you know, as he did the different iterations of each character. He drew the same pose. He just traced on top of it different elements. And that's why he used tracing paper so much.
So I could see that, and Alexander had one up there. And I have about 4.5 minutes of video. I'm a little too far back. So the video, like, I would have to go in and, like, bump up the audio. It's probably not going to sound great if I up it too much. When you started going through, because Alexander's wasn't the first character.
Right.
It wasn't even the first 4. We'd see him in wave 1. But you start talking and you pull in these guys up that are in the room to talk about their characters. And I'm seeing, like, as I said, I'm seeing grown man get teary-eyed and emotional. And so, of course, everybody else is getting emotional because they are. We're all excited for them. We're cheering. We're clapping. But I'm not sitting beside Alexander. Alexander's sitting up beside John Earl and his son, Bobby.
Yeah.
Get to his character. And, you know, I'm standing up and I'm recording and I'm teary-eyed. And Ben Conway, as good of a friend as he is, he doesn't look at what you're doing. He turns around and takes pictures of me crying.
Thanks, Ben.
Appreciate you, Ben.
Yeah. Just immortalize that moment.
You know, when it's over, the other submitters that are in the room are coming to me and be like, oh, congratulations on your son. And I'm like, don't congratulate me.
So awesome.
Like, I'm crying because I'm a dad. Don't congratulate me. He's over there.
Yeah.
He's one of you. I don't get to be one of you because I submitted Big Ass Goose Egg.
Yeah.
He submitted 3. And honestly, of the three that he submitted, that was the one that I thought I would like to see the most because of the robot leg.
Yeah.
But the one that I thought everybody's going to submit a ninja. The other two things he submitted were wholly unique. One was a blacksmith. But then when you talk about wholly unique, you know, Soligal is a luchador with some like G.I. Joe extreme fist things. That art, his art.
Yeah, he also had really big G.I. Joe extreme muscles too.
Oh, it blew me away. I loved it immediately.
Yeah.
Because all I could see was G.I. Joe extreme.
Right.
Mixed with luchador. And I loved it immediately. Everybody's characters, there were so many disparate things between pictures of people in costumes they've built.
Mm-hmm.
Chicken scratch drawings, full production art, drawings that looked like an action figure, drawings that didn't. But Alexander's, you know, it's a ninja in all black.
With a prosthetic leg, which was the selling point for sure.
Yes, he did a robot leg. And so my first question to him was like, were you inspired by Billy?
Yeah.
And he goes, no. And he went and he got Mike Powers, which is, you know, one of the Adventure Team G.I. Joe from the late 70s, which, by the way, vintage 3D Joes. It's an excellent, excellent resource.
That's my friend Matthew McKeeby.
I didn't realize that was a different person because you guys use the same format.
That's right. I set it up for him. So long story short, Flag Points podcast, David Gildersleeve is good friends with Matthew and David is good friends with me. And so he's basically like, Carson, if you're ever open to expanding 3D Joes, I've got the guy to do 12 inch. And I was like, absolutely. If he's going to take it and run with it, I'll set it up, give him a few template pages. I'll help him with the branding, the logo design, and set him free. And so that happened, geez, probably 9 or 8 years ago. It's been around for a long time now. So
it looks great.
People that haven't checked it out.
I've used it many times.
Check out vintage3djoes.com. It covers everything from 1964 to 1976. And then Jason, you might not know that there's a 3D Super Joes.
Yes, I did know the 3D Super Joes because I've looked at that as well. But there's also a Mask Archive website that uses the same format. And I was always curious if you were involved.
He's definitely credited me with inspiration. So I did not personally set him up and teach him how to do it.
You were the seed?
Yeah.
And this is what we're talking about. Alexander, the seed, was an all-black ninja with a robot leg and a fun name.
Yeah, the name is awesome, man. Shh. Why have we not gotten that before?
He kept telling me what the name is. And I was like, what? What are you saying?
Shh.
I'm a little hard of hearing. And he's like, shh. Oh, shh. I got it.
It could be the slice of a blade through the wind. Shh. You know? Or it could be telling people to shut up, which is funny too.
Yes. It could be both.
Yeah.
And I said, well, so he has a robot leg, but he's quiet. And he was like, yeah.
He wrote that into the file card, the bio. It was like reassurance. Like, look, just because he's got a prosthetic leg, don't worry. It's super quiet. He can still be still.
One of the things that he had been paying attention to through podcasts and YouTube and other things is people talking about the submissions they wanted to submit to this and always couching it in G.I. Joe and Cobra. And he asked me, he was like, should I be making a G.I. Joe or Cobra? I didn't think this was going to be G.I. Joe at all. And I was like, it's not.
Right.
When he wrote the file cards or I typed them, he told me what to say.
Right.
Because the one picture we did submit of his file card, his handwriting is almost as bad as mine. We typed it out, but all of his file cards were like, this guy is attached to Rotello because of this. And I was like, that's very clever of you.
Yeah, he was pulling on my heartstrings there. The fact that he wrote him and Rotello into boot camp together, I retain that information.
This is the mind of a 10-year-old. I mean, he's about to be 11, so 10 and a half. But I would have certainly said, oh, yeah, it's part of Operation Recall, right? Like, no big deal. But he is like, he's going all the way to Rotello.
Yeah, I love it. It was smart. It was a brilliant tactic. He knows how to emotionally pull at people's heartstrings.
He at least got one person on the team involved.
No, and he got Mark Pennington. Mark Pennington wanted as quick as he saw him. He was like, there's my opportunity.
That's awesome.
To do another black ninja, if you get my drift.
He's like, is Ron doing mine? I said, no, Ron's not doing yours. And he's like, oh. I was like, but Mark Pennington is. And here's all the other characters Mark's done. He's like, oh. Because he hasn't met Mark.
Yeah, Mark Pennington is amazing.
Yeah.
And, you know, to Mark's credit, I only met Mark the March before last, and we recorded 3 or 4 hours in his hotel at some convention in South Carolina. And it took me a year and a half to build that creator profile. And, you know, if you think of it, outside of 3D Joe's creator profiles, you can buy Dan's books, and there's a little bit of pre-production, you know, creator interviews and stuff on Yo Joe. But I'll toot my own horn here. Once you build the creator profile in 3D Joes, that's a lot of information. There's a lot of text on those pages, and there's dozens, if not 100 or more photos on every page. And so I think more and more people are starting to catch on to the significant amount of work that Mark did in 3 short years.
Yeah. And if you look at Mark's modern artwork, he's not slowed down.
No, he's super talented.
He's super good. And his stuff is a little more leaning, you know, that Magnolia comic book-esque. Last year, I don't have it to show you because I've mailed it to John Kukovich with Grindstone for him to do a page in it. Which I'm crazy excited about. And Ron's done a page in it. Thank you, Jenny. She talked him into it. He didn't want to do anything that small. But last year, I had Alex Sanchez and Mark Pennington both do a page. Oh, and Jason Sobel.
Nice.
So at Joe Fest, I got 3 pages out of 1 Joe Fest. And Mark, he goes, listen, I don't know the characters the way you know them. And I went, well, choose somebody that you made that you like to draw.
Right.
And he's like, Outback is my man. And I was like, okay. It's an amazing Outback.
Awesome.
I showed that Outback to a few comic book friends. And the next thing I know, I've got 4 or 5 different friends sending me their Outbacks. Mark inspired me. They don't know who Mark is. They know who Outback is. They played with Outback as a kid. But they're not part of our community, Joe-wise. So I don't know who he is. But I showed them the picture and they all were inspired.
Dude, Outback is one of those timeless characters. If you look at the most common kind of themes that ran through the 177 submissions, the survivalist was probably there was more survivalists than there were ninjas. I'll put it that way. Yeah, seriously. Like,
I expected a lot of Snake Eyes and Storm Shadows.
People really gravitate. No, not many at all. People gravitate to that idea that you could just go out in the wild, live on your own, live off the earth, and kind of, you know, be a guerrilla warfare saboteur if you have to. Like, that's a super, super popular concept.
I'm way more Alley Viper than Outback. Like, I don't want to go outside of the city.
Right on.
Well, I hope that the other 161 submissions, or maybe the other 84 people, they get to see some action and that the community supports this as much as I'm wanting to support it.
Yeah.
When we get down the road and you take more submissions, more people are going to be open.
Oh, absolutely. I think so. The proof is in the pudding.
Causing these retirees even more effort in having to really choose the ones that speak to them.
I will say we might expand the creative team to include a few more designers, sculptors, etc.
Beautiful.
As needed. Like Bill Merkline has me in touch with a very good sculptor that was a good friend of his and freelancer for Hasbro as well. So as needed, I don't want to stress these guys or bend them beyond what they're comfortable doing for this project. So we'll be cognizant of that. I don't think I will ask them to create more than the 18 figures for year one.
Yeah.
But when year one's done, if they're like that, I want even more. It's like, great. Let's do year two. Onward we go. That doesn't have to wait until manufacturing's done. I can be reinvesting the money from the book and the backer kit and et cetera into going ahead and paying them for the creative development. So I would say if we do a second Kickstarter for Operation Recall year two, I would like to be at the point where we've already selected the concepts and the creators have already done their at least initial ideation. I think there's a charm and uniqueness to how we're rolling out waves 1 through 4 with the original submission art. Like, it's going to be really fun to show Alexander's illustration of Shh, for example. And then you'll, you know, compare that to Adam Rich's is like fully polished, like professional, you know, it'll show a good range. I think it shows the community that's been engaged. I think the age range is from 10 years old to 60 something years old. And geographically, it's from the United States to New Zealand.
Yeah.
And that's just the 16 that were selected. So it's cool to show a broad cross section of the community where we come from, ages and demographics. But I think for year two, I'd like to have the Mark art and the Ron art for all the way.
Let's end it here. Thanks again for spending time with us discussing toys and other geeky things. Our logo was made by Rhino. The music we use was created by Self Help. You can find Joel on Instagram at Order of Battle Pod. Jason is on Twitter at Order of Battle PD. Our email is orderofbattlepod@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you, and thank you for your likes, comments, outreaches, and just being here with us.
There's so many different things to get into creatively in your life. Like if you just look at G.I. Joe as a community, there's cosplayers, there's customizers, there's artists, there's archivists like myself. There's all kinds of different areas you can get into and express yourself creatively.
This has been the Order of Battle.